Hi, everyone. You're listening to another episode of the Style Files podcast. I'm your host, Paloma Contreras. And before we welcome today's guest, Jane Churchill, I want to take a moment to thank each and every one of you for tuning in to the Style Files this year. I set out to start this podcast back in March at the beginning of the pandemic, thinking it would be a wonderful and welcomed respite from the craziness happening in the world for all of you who are fellow design lovers and enthusiasts. I can't tell you how touched I've been by all of the feedback that I've gotten. There have been so many of you who have reached out saying how much you've enjoyed the different interviews, how they've resonated with you, and I can't begin to tell you how many of you have reached out saying that listening to the Style Files, hearing the stories from all of our incredible guests has inspired you to go after your own passions and possibly pursue a career in design or whatever that passion might be. So thank you again for tuning in. It's been quite an adventure, quite a ride. We've recorded over 60 episodes since March, which has been quite a feat. But needless to say, I am a little bit tired. It's been a lot to take on. It's been incredible. I've enjoyed each and every one of these conversations so much. And again, I've loved hearing the feedback from the listeners. But as you know, life gets a little bit more hectic. I announced recently that I'm expecting a baby girl in June. So it's time to simplify a little bit in certain areas because life is going to get even busier. So as such, I will be taking a little bit of a hiatus with the podcast. So before I introduce you to today's guests, I just want to let you know that I'll be signing off for a while. That doesn't mean that we'll be signing off forever. We may have some special bonus episodes here and there. And if there's someone that you especially want to hear from, you know, please do reach out and let me know. But in the meantime, again, thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. It's been amazing. Our guest today truly needs no introduction. She is one of the foremost names in design. Jane Churchill, the London-based designer, started her background working with the likes of Colfax and Fowler. She has an incredible trajectory, an incredible history. She sort of grew up in design and has quite a history within her family even of some of the most amazing design luminaries. So I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. She's an absolutely brilliant conversationalist. I learned so much and enjoyed our conversation thoroughly. So without further ado, please welcome Jane Churchill. Hello.
Paloma, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Jane?
I'm very well, thank you.
Fantastic. Well, I'm delighted to be speaking with you today.
And you.
Well, are you ready to dive in?
I certainly am, whenever.
Excellent. Okay, good. This will be so fun. I'm just thrilled to speak with you because, you know, you're a name, at least to us in the States, that's so synonymous with what is known as English style. So I'll be curious to hear sort of your take on that and what that means to you. But we'll start at the beginning. You sort of come from decorating royalty, if we will. Your great aunt was Nancy Lancaster, the famous British designer, known for creating the English country house look. And you eventually went on to work for Colfax and Fowler. What kind of impact did Nancy specifically have on your career? And what would you say that you inherited from both she and your grandmother, Alice Wynne?
Well, I think that both of them had an enormous effect on both my sister, Melissa, and myself. Because, first of all, they were, and of course, they're American. They're not English. They're American.
Right.
Or my grandmother never said she was American. She said she was Virginian. And when I married Charles Churchill, who after all, as you know, had his grandmother was a Vanderbilt. She said to me, "How can you marry a Yankee?" So that's how strongly they felt about it, about being Southerners. They both were the most amazing characters, as well, full of energy. I mean, that's what's come down through that American line. The energy is like being on speed, or most of the time. But they were fun, but they weren't pretentious either. You know. Everything was done in just such a normal, natural way. And Nancy obviously had much more money than my grandmother. And she just did up the and much bigger houses and did these beautiful houses. But my grandmother drew beautifully. She could sculpt, she could draw. And I remember her, she had a terrible tragedy when her son was drowned when he was like 28 years old. And she built with my mother's brother. And she built this with the sort of money that he'd left. She built this house in Portugal without using an architect, without speaking Portuguese. And it was unbelievably attractive and pretty and amazing. You know, she just was extraordinarily talented and could turn the smallest house into something just like a jewel box. Wonderful.
That's incredible. And what a feat to take on alone, essentially.
I know. You know, she's extraordinarily talented. And I think we very much brought up with them being the, and of course, Nancy Astor as well, you know, who was their aunt and my great, their aunt, my great, great aunt, but who, you know, and they were very, very important and strong influences in our lives. And Melissa and I used to go and stay with Aunt Nancy Lancaster almost every holidays, and we really used to look forward to it because first of all the comfort was wonderful and we were totally treated like grown-ups as well, and you just learned a lot from being around her, you know. But I think in the same way, actually, if but it wasn't like drummed into you. It's like my children who couldn't pass an exam if you put a gun to their head, but because I was in, but because I was in this business, I took them round. You know, they always came on site with me and this sort of thing. And my eldest son certainly could rewire your house by the time he was about 12 and replumb your washing machine when he was about 14. So, you know, I think you do take it on board if you are, I mean, sometimes, of course, it goes straight over people's heads. But thank God with us, it didn't. We sucked it up, I would say.
Would you say that you were aware of design or the importance of home and what all everything that that meant from a young age being in these houses?
Very much aware of it, but as more as just being aware that it was around you, not aware of it as a business, as you might say. Do you know what I mean? Not thinking, oh, this could lead to that or whatever. You know, it was just, you were just enveloped in it and it was wonderful. And it was also fun, and they're very family minded and there are always lots of cousins and relations there, and I think it also brought in that side, which is really nice as well, and you really appreciate that when you're grown up.
Sure. Well, I read that you went to boarding school in Sussex and then ended up studying in Switzerland and Paris. You focused on architecture and fine art.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch. The school I went to, I did go to boarding school, but it was, you know, in those days, girls weren't educated in the same way that they are now. So I went and I had a lot of fun, but what I learned is rather minimal. So I had to sort of learn on the hoof afterwards, really. You know, that wouldn't have got me anywhere, I can assure you of that.
So you landed in London and worked for Colfax and Fowler. What was that experience like?
Well, I was a slave in Colfax and Fowler, as one was in those days, you know. But you know, I actually like working, which, you know, I mean, I was sent to work at the age of 17, you know, because one didn't go to university, certainly not for thickos like me, but all many girls of my age of that era anyway, either, unless you were very, you know, intellectual, which I certainly wasn't. And so, you know, I always enjoyed working. And then and then I got married, like one did, age 10 in those days, you know, I was 21, you know, I had a child at 22. And then I opened my own shop when I was 23, which I suppose when I look around me today is rather surprising, but it wasn't so surprising then, you know. And wait for this one, I'm still in the same shop 100 years later.
Are you really?
Wow. Yes, I'm the oldest bag in, you know, I've been here longer than anyone else, old bag on the street. But I'm so lucky because I came to the Pimlico Road purely by chance. And in those days, it was people like Geoffrey Benazon and Henry Woods Wilson, this wonderful antique dealer. And, you know, I was surrounded by all these people as well.
Right.
I had a gift shop where we used to go to Italy and buy wonderful china from Estée and from or Bassano, that is a, you know, huge, great china area, you know, that was selling to places like Saks Fifth Avenue and that kind of thing. And we used to buy it here. And I mean, you know, I remember we used to go in a we used to hire a car Florence Airport, and then we had written down left, right, and straight on, because there was no sat nav in those days, so at least we could ask some directions to the next place, of the next bit we got to, you know. So funny. I mean, God knows why we were still alive. I can't imagine. But anyway, it was very, very interesting, and we used to, you know, and then import everything. So I had that for 10 years. But while I had in this shop here, and then while I had that business, you know, I'd done my own house and everything, people said, oh, could you help me? And so I sort of did. And then I actually gave up the gift shop because other stores here started to sort of import, and I wasn't unique, which I was when I first started. And that's when I started my line of fabrics and wallpapers, and then sort of got into design as well. And I thought, oh, I might as well turn this into a business too. So it all happened just really, I'm quite lucky. I sort of fell into it in a easy way, which of course isn't so easy today, you know.
Sure. Well, and I'm sure it sounds that way looking back on all those years ago, but at, you know, it's not. Obviously, it takes time, no matter how organic the path might be.
But also then, you know, if I went, you know, when we borrowed the money and things, I go with, you know, the people I did it with, and there were both my partners in the fabric wallpaper business were men. The bankers never looked or never even gave me eye contact because I was a girl aged 23. They probably thought complete airhead, you know. And, you know, it wasn't done for women to be have businesses like that then, you know, or not so much not done, but it didn't really happen. You know,
sure.
And so, you know, that which is so funny today, isn't it?
But anyway, well, I think someone my age would take that for granted because we haven't had to face those challenges and setting out to hang our shingle and create our own businesses. You know, that those were a different set of challenges, certainly.
Yes, exactly. But I mean, you know, anyway, the good thing is I got there in the end, is what I can say.
Jane, tell us a little bit, for those who may not be familiar with London and the design scene in London, tell us a little bit about Pimlico Road and how special
Pimlico
that
Road
area
been,
really is.
Well, I've been here 39 years, and that's when wonderful icons like Geoffrey Benison had a, you know, had a fantastic antique shop. And then in the days when, you know, there were shops like that, not so many now, obviously. And then, of course, he had his own fabrics and things. And there was this wonderful character called Henry Woods Wilson. And opposite me was that Spanish shop called Casa Pupo, which is so funny because now I see sort of bits of china on eBay or in antique shops, even, you know, when, you know, to me, it's not an I'm the antique, not that, you know. anyway, so it's just so funny. And so it's always been, I suppose you would say, a street for, you know, things for the house or home. And then now we've got Chelsea Textiles opposite me, and Colfax and Fowler have moved in. You know, people say, Colfax and Fowler are, you know, next to you. I said, no, they're next to me, actually. I got here first, thank you very much. You know, so it's just so, and then, you know, we've got the Daylesford, that wonderful brand Daylesford, right opposite me. And so it's just always remained, and then there's nice little stores as well. There's a very good picture framer called Johnny Ramsey. There's a very good tiny antique shop called Tarquin Bilgen, he used to work for Mallet, so he's got very good taste and has very nice things. So it's just a really, it's a very nice atmosphere to be here. You know, I'm not surrounded just by millions of banks and coffee shops, you know.
Sure. What is the design community like in London? Do you feel that it's supportive and collegial?
Oh, yes, I think so, because obviously quite a lot of us have been in it for years. I mean, you know, one's lucky, and well, a lot of us are friends, and, you know, and I'm very lucky being situated here because I got Chelsea Harbour up the wall, up the road. I can sort of fall out of bed into anything that I need. I don't have to go miles, you know.
That's fantastic. Well, Jane, you have such a delightful ability to combine classic and traditional elements that results in a unique and personal style. Your designs are elegant, yet livable, with a contemporary flair. Would you say you have a signature style? And if so, how would you describe it?
Well, I think the thing is that what we particularly learned from my grandmother and from Nancy Lancaster, and my aunt is that, you know, comfort's the most important thing. You know, all the sort of sofas were really comfortable. They didn't have to look all old fashioned anymore, you know, or whatever. But everything was, and, you know, and chairs talking to chairs and a table to put something down on. You know, it's all those sort of elements that matter. You know, it's all very well going into a room where you just feel that you can't sort of relax, you know, because after all, what I'm doing mostly are homes, you know.
Right. What does comfort mean to you?
Well, certainly, actually, my 8-year-old granddaughter the other day said she was going to stay with her. She was, my son said, well, we've been asked to stay with her. And she said, are the beds comfy? I thought, that's good. Chip off the old block. You know, she's noticing.
She knows what matters.
Oh, yeah, she knows what matters. Exactly. I just think that, you know, to feel that, I don't like things that sort of feel very much as though it's a room set or done by a property developer or, you know what I mean, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then there are certain elements I loathe, like low mattresses on the floor, very low mattresses and low bedside tables when you want the light above you so that you can see. I can't bear those ditzy little lights. But I'm not saying that everything has to be comfortable, has to be expensive. I mean, in one of my... I moved like a lemming, but I used to till stamp duty came in. Moved like a lemming round London as children came and went and etc. And I mean, in one of my three houses back, my kitchen chairs were covered in this incredibly pretty material from IKEA, you know. And if you're clever and you could look for things in that way, things don't have to always cost a fortune, which I think is also become a bit too much of a thing when it's decorating. Everything's got to look expensive. No, it doesn't. You know, buy something and paint it. Or, you know, I've got a mm-hmm. table that belonged to my grandmother, which is now brown furniture. I'm going to paint it because it's not worth anything anymore.
Right, but it means something to you having been exactly. passed down.
Yeah, and it's a very good shape. You know, it's sure. the shapes and where things fit and things like that.
Has the idea of comfort evolved for you in this past year with everything going on in the world?
Well, you need it even more if more people live at, well, I think so, because interestingly mm-hmm. now, you know, of course, people, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating the number, as I, you know, on Instagram, the place settings, the tablescapes and whatever, whereas 3 years ago nobody even thought about that, you know. And this is because people are at home, and then you couldn't go to a restaurant, but you were allowed to have a certain number to the house. So therefore, you know, and I always think it takes, if you've got the stuff, which again, doesn't have to be wildly expensive, you know, all my I've got very nice water glasses because William Yearwood, who sadly died, who has that wonderful brand, gave yes. them to me. But all my other glasses do come from IKEA, you know. So things, you have to be clever how you put things together. And of course, it takes just as long to lay a table nicely and put a bit of effort into it as it does by slamming crap on the table. Do you know what I mean?
I couldn't agree more. Mm. Yeah, you don't have to spend a fortune. It's about, like you said, being clever and using a little bit of creativity and ingenuity when putting something together for one's home.
Yes, exactly. And I think because of this, because we've all been locked down in homes now, people have now taken their homes more seriously. I mean, it, you know, it's amazing. That was the one thing that, you know, Amazon were running around the country with, you know, furniture, lit, you know, all that kind of thing for houses, because people have realised now, instead of sort of coming home exhausted, I don't know, God knows what hour and whatever, and spending most of the time in the office, your home is really what matters.
I think that's been one of the silver linings that's come out of this time.
One of the good things that's come out. I agree with you. Mm.
Definitely. Mm. Let's talk a little bit about London. How do you achieve the balance of contemporary or modern living in such a busy city, one with a bit of a frenetic pace, and working within its historical presence as well?
Well, obviously, with certain buildings, you know, because where things are listed up to the eyeballs, and half the people who are, you know, the planners are sort of 12 and a half and know nothing, you know. So, you know, you have to get around that quite often, which isn't very easy. But you can still easily do a mix of things. And when you're building out a room with, you know, more modern windows and things like that. And, you know, and of course, the other thing that's become incredibly popular here, because everyone seems to live in one room, especially houses in the country have gone through the roof here, rather like in America, people moving out. But they over here, they all want sort of a, what's called, you know, it's a barn type room, you know, high ceiling and da da da, so that, you know, you have kitchen, living area, children, whatever. And so, you know, that's obviously a lot more modern than it would be to these ditzy little rooms that sometimes you can't always do that much with.
Yes, indeed. What percentage of your time do you spend working on client projects versus product design these days?
Well, I don't, because I don't own the fabrics and wallpapers any longer. It's more client, you know, more with clients, really. Mm.
Do you have a large team?
No, not that large. I don't, because I have a team that work with me. I've been incredibly lucky who I employ, but I sort of oversee really everything. So, you know, that's the way. If they come to me, then, you know, I'm the one who sort of makes the final decisions and things. And of course, I love working with architects. We've done a lot of working with architects from the beginning. And, you know, even though I never studied architecture, but again, I've learned that on the hoof, you know, and understand about rooms flowing into each other and room layouts and all the sort of things. Like, you know, it's so interesting when you're building, you've done new houses, you know, or especially working in old ones in London or something, you know, you say to the architect, well, where's the Hoover and the ironing board going to go? Because they never think about things like that. And often you have to be very careful if it's a new build, how they do the windows. Because in England, you certainly want to have curtains because of the winter. So you've got to make sure that, you know, the window's not right up against the wall or, you know, and it's people like me that can spot that rather than the client who's never done this kind of thing before.
Right, exactly. Are the majority of your projects in London or no, out in the
always.
Country?
I mean, I've worked everywhere. I've been everywhere from Australia to America to the Caribbean to where else? So, Europe and Saudi Arabia, Qatar. We did something in Qatar. And, you know, I've had to, and I even did, you'll love this one, I even did for a Middle Eastern client, I had to decorate 6 rooms at the Portland Hospital, which is the posh maternity hospital here.
Oh, wow.
And I had to do a bed valance for a hospital bed that could have been whipped off if she had to go to the operating theatre.
This was just for her stay?
Yes, this was for her stay, but she was having twin sons, and you know how, you know. Twin,
oh, wow.
Yes, well, yeah, anyway, that was really entertaining because I love doing things that are completely different. I've done the inside of a horse box for not where the horses live, but these days, you know how they have a bit where people stay, the drivers and the grooms stay in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we had to do make that nice and pleasant and comfortable. I've done the inside of a Rolls Royce. I did that as a promotion for them.
So you've done it all.
I'll take on anything, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's so great. Yeah. Well, and I think that speaks to your flexibility as a designer to be able to design not only in a variety of styles, but also such different environments.
But it makes it more fun. It makes it fun. And, you know, nothing like being stretched.
Right. I think that's one of the most fun parts of being an interior designer is that every house or every project, every client is really different from the last. It keeps things interesting and I think helps us to continue to grow and evolve as creatives.
Exactly. Every day, I find every day is different because after all, I'm working with different people, different ages, different nationalities, going to different places. And that is, you know, very uplifting. It really is.
Absolutely. What do you find to be the most important piece, the most important criteria for a successful relationship between client and designer?
Well, the thing about being a designer, you really have to be part psychiatrist as well, you know.
Yes, indeed.
You've got to understand the client. And also, they don't want to be told just by you what to do. You know, if they have an idea, I never say, no, I think that's absolute rubbish. I always say, absolutely. And then a few days later, if I really don't like it, I say, do you know what? I've had another idea that I really think you might like more. So everything's how, but it's like anything in any business that you're in, it's called marketing, you know. It's how you market yourself to the client, how you get on with them, how you have a relationship with them. And they're all different. And I've made very, very good friends over the years, which is great. There was only one person that I said no to, which was she have a house in quite a big square here. And she asked me to go round and have a look. And she then sent me a letter saying she wanted, this is a big house. This is quite a few years ago. She wanted to spend £10,000 on it. Well, you know, quite
oh, honestly, gosh,
that would have possibly done, you know, a small part of it. And then so I wrote back to her and I just really wasn't 100% certain I'd be able to achieve that. And then a week later, I saw a sign up on the tree outside our house offering £1,000 for her cat, which had disappeared. I thought, well, now I know your priorities. You know.
Exactly. Well, isn't that interesting? Because oftentimes, I do think this is something that a lot of designers struggle with. It's that conversation about the budget for the project. Oh, and no one likes to talk about money, but unfortunately in our business, it's necessary because you have to know if the financial allocation is in line with the visual goals.
Yeah, you know, and also the other thing is you don't want to give them a shock because they haven't done anything for a very long time. And also the other thing, you know, I don't use a cheap builder. My builder is not cheap. He's extremely good. You never have a problem afterwards. And you get the aftercare, which is worth zillions in today's world, you know. But they don't always, they do when they're about three houses along the route. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Not at the beginning.
And that's so true. It's so true. And I think what you said about the cat really hits the nail on the head. At the end of the day, it boils down to what people value. I've had experiences before where I remember doing a consultation years ago with a woman and she walked me through her house and it was a rather large house and we made it to the master bedroom and she showed me her closet. And of course she had every designer bag and every designer pair of shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the budget for the project was so small, I couldn't take the project on because I knew that we would never be able to do it for the amount that she was thinking was justifiable. And it just reminded me that, you know, we all value different things. Clearly she cared about fashion and the way that she presented herself, but didn't place the same value on the way that, you know, she spent money for her home.
But I think that's turned a bit because as you can't go anywhere, so where are you going to wear your Manolo Blahnik shoes now, you know? And that I think people have now sort of turned it a bit and would rather spend it more on the house where they get more, in a way, more bang for their buck because it lasts longer, etc. And I'm hoping that that might have made a bit of a difference.
It's true. And I hope that it has a lasting effect. I think generally everyone I've spoken to in the design world has said that they're, you know, quite busy and have been for the majority of this year as everyone, as you've said, has realized the importance of home and, you know, they can't travel the way that they typically do.
No.
They're not leaving their home. So they're not spending the money on their wardrobe or anything else. So they're choosing to spend money on their home.
Exactly. And so maybe they'll get a bit more used to it. Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, well, I think it'd be helpful to all of us, actually, if people came to that realization on their own. How do you decide which projects to say yes to?
Well, there are not many that I've said no to, really. I mean, I've just said, you know, it's, you know, because by the time you've got quite far into it and then you realize it really is not going to be much fun, you're too far down the line. Do you know what I mean? So you just have to bite the bullet and do the best you can. But 9 times out of 10 ones, you know, I've been very lucky with the people I've worked for, I think.
That's wonderful. Do you typically create lasting relationships with your clients?
Yes, I have. I mean, as I said, I've got, you know, quite a few clients who become very good friends, you know, or they suddenly appear again or whatever, you know. Yeah. From
That's
all
so
over.
Great. That's wonderful. How would you say that English style differs from American style?
Well, I think, of course, you've got to remember, and it's the same in every country, actually, that the light is so different. We have this very grey light here. You know, I agree, we had a fantastic summer this year, but as you know, that's one in a million. Things that look great, things that look very good in America, very sort of brightly coloured, don't necessarily look as good here, but people are game for sort of brighter colours, but it's done in a different way than in America, you know. And so I'd have said it's more, probably it's more pared down a bit.
Interesting. And but I feel like the English A lot of English designers tend to embrace a lot of color and pattern, and I guess that speaks to maybe the coziness of the aesthetic.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you look at somebody like Kit Kemp, you know, has those wonderful hotels, the Ferndale Hotels. They're wonderful. They're brilliant and so clever and original and full of, you know, bright, you know, but it all works. It all just works.
Yes, definitely. Or Ben Pentreath.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, he uses a lot of color as well.
Mm.
So as I was doing my research and preparing for our conversation today, I found an interview from the Chicago Tribune from way back in 1985 in which you talk of and you spoke of plans to expand your business and the future of Churchill Designs. How does it feel to look back on that and have those dreams realized? What did you envision for yourself starting out, and what have you created today more than anything that you could have imagined at that time?
Well, I suppose just starting with my gift shop, I thought it'd be a sort of small gift shop that, you know, but I mean, I'd always worked. I always remember my middle son, when he was at school, he must have been about seven, saying to me, because he thought my life was like his. He said to me, when's your half term? You know, I suppose I thought of it as being quite never evolving probably into what it did. And I suppose by then doing the fabrics and wallpapers and starting the interior design side, which, you know, they were much older people doing interior design then, you know, Colfax and that sort of thing, that there weren't the many number of, like, everybody's an interior designer today. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it's morphed just by chance. I mean, I suppose I got on the rung of the ladder at the right time, but you never necessarily know that, do you? It can be, you can take the wrong route pretty damn easily, can't you?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, you're quite lucky to have had such a path and to have created such a trajectory for yourself.
Well, it's given me a wonderful life as well, you know, which is interesting. And going all over the world and meeting interesting people. And, you know, I mean, when I was before lockdown in February this year, you know, Sotheby's paid for me to go over to be on the panel for the Mario Boata sale, which was lovely because he, you know, my aunt Nancy Lancaster was absolutely one of his heroines. And there were four things in the sale that she had owned that had belonged to her. And of course, I could do no wrong as I was her niece. So, you know, we were sort of great friends, etc. And it was just lovely to be part of that as well, you know. And I was on the panel promoting it with Charlotte Moss, and we were asked questions about him and about her and, you know, how she came into his life, etc. And so, you know, these are strange things like that that you wouldn't even think of.
That's so special.
Totally. Mm.
So wonderful. Mm. I know he's dearly missed.
Oh, he was such a character. Yes. Mm. I filmed so him funny. For television, funny enough. And that, when I had a television program 100 years ago, when I was one of those 5 minute slots on This Morning. And one program that we did was like, we showed how people lived in different ways in America, in New York rather. And we filmed his apartment, but of course, nobody was ever allowed in, as you know. And because you've never seen so much chutzkies, I think they're called, you know, in that apartment, he had to stay up all night to clear the living room, etc., so that I could film it. And actually, Hilary Ross, who'd been such a wonderful client and friend to him, I happened to tell her when he died, and she actually, I still had the video of it, and it was played at his. You saw it. It was up at his funeral, and it was also up in the Sotheby's sale room as well when his stuff was on show, of us filming his apartment, because I was one of the few people who got in there.
Oh, how fun.
Mm.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Where do you turn for inspiration? What inspires you?
Oh my goodness, anything. You know, I can walk along a street and I can see something on the pavement or railings going somewhere, or, you know, I find inspiration, or, you know, as I've traveled a lot, you find it wherever you go. You know, it can be the smallest thing too that you can turn into a carpet design, or, you know, that just works, or, you know, it depends really. I mean, I know I've been, I remember going to sales and then trying to, you know, when you see wonderful old materials. And of course, now you can photograph them all. But in those days, you had to somehow tear a bit off when nobody was looking, you know. I have to admit, I've done that before now. Anyway.
We all have.
Yeah, afraid so. Yeah. But now, of course, it's easy. It's above board because I can take a photograph.
That's so great.
I've got photographs on my, you know, that I take something and then, but I still haven't got around to filing them all in the right place, but it will happen.
I'm the same way. My phone's a mess. It's filled with photos, but sometimes I'll go back and look for something specific and I'll come across something else and it just inspires me all over again.
I agree. It leads to something else.
Yes, indeed. What are some of your indispensable design elements?
Well, I think that it's very important to make, you know, especially in bedrooms, as I say, you've got to have the bedside tables high enough. You've got to have the lamps, and same in the sitting room. You want the lighting to be, you know, it's got to be distributed around the room, not one lamp here. And the other thing is, which actually they don't really do now, but, you know, people would have four pictures and they'd hang them on four walls. You'd hang all four on one wall, you know, things like that, because pictures now are hung in a much more higgledy-piggledy way, which actually is rather nice. And so things have changed like that. But you can see, and also the other thing is that I think people, because one's lucky enough to be in the business long enough, you get the you understand scale, but I can't bear things that are too small. You always want to, it's much better to err on the side of things being a bit too big in a way, you know. Otherwise things look so ditzy and whatever, you know. And that, I think, is what you and I are able to imagine, and people who haven't been in this business can't, and they don't, I'm not sure they quite get it, that that's what they're paying for, you know.
What other detail do you think is frequently overlooked?
Well, I mean, I'm brilliant at finding places for storage. You'd be amazed where I put storage, especially in houses in London where there isn't much, and, you know, I don't know, even in skirting boards and things like that, you know.
Wow.
Where you can put shoes and goodness knows, you know, you just have to sort of be able to think like that.
Well, they say necessity is the mother of invention. So.
Yes, exactly.
What are you currently working on that you're most excited about?
Well, I'm doing a very nice apartment in one of the big streets in London, quite close to here. And I discovered that they'd lowered all the ceilings, but they'd also sort of blocked out some of the walls. And by complete that, there were sort of niches everywhere. I thought there must be a straight wall somewhere. And then I found that there were. And so I actually, you can't believe the amount of space I've gained. And the place looks twice as big. You know, it's things like that that are really exciting. We've just finished the house between Eaton Square and Chester Square. And then I'm probably going to be hopefully working on something in the Middle East. And, you know, so you never know what's round the corner.
That's so exciting. Is there anything that people might be surprised to learn about you, or are you a pretty open book? Jane?
Oh, you're there. Yes. Sorry, Elizabeth.
Yes. Can you hear me? Yes. Is there anything that people might be surprised
sure
to learn about
dreadful.
You?
I probably shouldn't. I didn't, really don't want to impart, I think. I'll keep that a secret. Let them do the digging.
Perfect. If you could go back in time, is there a piece of advice that you would give your younger self, knowing what you know now?
I think that, I mean, at least I think I've done it without doing things too fast. You know, you have to sort of, because obviously I don't have a financial background. I think it's terribly important to do things that you feel comfortable with. Never have too many borrowings, because you don't know. I mean, look at this pandemic. Who would have thought that would have happened? And I've always been very nervous. I mean, the way I run a business is like snakes and ladders. Do you know what I mean? Because that's how I understand it. What I don't want, and I've never, ever been sucked into having borrowings and expanding and all that kind of thing. And, you know, into which I think is very, very important. Even if somebody else is paying for it, who wants to lose money for other people?
Exactly. Well, and I think it's quite telling that you're still in the same space that you've been in since you opened.
I probably got feet first, I think.
Well, you've had quite the time-honored career. What would you say that you're most proud of professionally? And what does success mean to you?
That I'm still here, still around. And, you know, my name is quite well known and things like that. And the fact that without an education, because, I mean, you'd be horrified if you saw, you know, my lack of education, etc., that I've managed to keep the show on the road. It just shows you. All these degrees, I mean, where do they bloody lead, you know? Huh? Unless you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. But in my sort of business, that ain't going to help you get anywhere, you know, unless you do architecture.
Oh, I agree.
Like that. And I think if you start young enough, you know, it's like with my children who certainly never went to university, but touch wood, they're all self-feeders. They've all done incredibly well because they've all got a work ethic and they've all really worked. And of course, they had 3 years ahead of everybody else who went to university. So then when the others come out, you're sort of ahead of the game, actually. So never be put off by thinking,
that's
fantastic.
I haven't
got a degree and I haven't got a university, I haven't been to university. So bloody what? And when I had my television programme, might I tell you that my biggest audience were my friends' children who were watching it between 9:30 and 10:30, rather than studying or, you know, going to a lecture. They were all watching morning television.
That's fantastic. Well, there's a lot to be said about a strong work ethic and tapping into one's passion and then, you know, taking it upon oneself to learn everything that you can and to absorb, you know, by observing what's going on around you and
My children all did sort of, they always had sort of holiday jobs. I mean, my brother says I put my children up chimneys when they were about 10, but my God, it's paid off, I can tell you.
That is too funny. You were once quoted to say you built something to expand upon and there's no end to it. What is next for you? What does the future look like? And what is the legacy you hope to leave with the Jane Churchill Empire?
Yes, it's very hard to say because you never know in life the way things are going. I'm working on this sort of book at the moment, which you'll be the first to know about when I get it all underway. You know, so there's always other things you can do. And I've designed furniture. You know, I had a line of furniture at High Point at one point, which where they say, hi, y'all. Which I absolutely love. That was really fun. And, you know, I've done some design furniture for a couple of places here. I've done fireplaces with chesneys. I've done carpets, you know. So whatever anybody asks me to do, I'm on. I'm on for it. I'll have a go.
That's fantastic. Are you more likely to say yes than to say no to something?
No, I hate the word no. No, I never say no to things. Unless it's absolutely completely ridiculous. But I can't really think of anything I've said no to. But no, I like to do things. Well, I think that, you know, as you go on, the more you do of that kind of thing, the more you learn and the more it helps in anything else that you're doing.
Right. That's a fabulous quality to have. I think a lot of people get hung up by fear or trepidation. And sometimes you just have to take the leap and assume and hope that the net will appear and you'll figure it out and it'll be a success. I think a lot of that lies in just believing that you can do something.
I think that's very true. Yeah.
Well, Jane, as we wrap up, I'll ask you one last question. What is currently giving you hope in the world of design or otherwise?
Well, I think the fact that in the world of design, I mean, I think a lot of things are made, you know, people are like, and also in America, I think that, you know, when I was at High Point, all the furniture was made there in America. And I think now that it's because of sustainability and people not wanting to import things and from, you know, I don't know, but you would know more than me. Are things going back to being made in America as well?
I think it can be maybe split in two. I believe that there are parts of the industry that are sort of beholden to the idea of cost and lead times, and a lot of those things obviously are made abroad. But there's also been a movement in recent years
towards
craftsmanship and storytelling.
You know, that wonderful shop, So. Well, Lulu Little's right opposite me. She has this incredible rattan furniture, which is very expensive, but it's absolutely beautiful. And it's all made in England. And, you know, I think that there is more. I think that is going to happen more and more, actually, which I think is a very good thing. And it, after all, creates jobs here. And the more we can create jobs in this country and things that are interesting rather than stacking shelves, you know, can only be a good thing.
Right. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, Jane, this has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I've loved hearing your stories and more about your personal history and your path. It's all so fascinating and inspiring.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it, Paloma. And I hope you come over here sometimes when you can.
I do. It's been a while. And obviously, you know, right now I can't, but I'm hoping to get there as soon as I can.
Yeah.
And I'll absolutely, I will. I would love that.
Lovely.
Fantastic. Well, take good care, Jane. Thank you so much. That was interior designer and product designer Jane Churchill. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to visit us online at palomacontreras.com under the podcast tab, where you can find more episodes featuring inspiring conversations with creatives. You can listen directly on our website or subscribe via Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying the Style Files, please consider spreading the word and leaving us a positive rating or review. It will only take a few seconds of your time, and it will make a big difference for us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.